Y'all better put him in the Heisman.
Got that award right here, baby.
This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light Seltzer, for those anytime easy drinking occasion.
Guys, I've been listening to y'all since this show aired.
When I turn on the Morning Rush, I want to hear Ty at his best every single day.
There are people that have saved up all year and done whatever it took just to get a ticket, just to get a glimpse at the Razorback.
Ty, fortunately, has saved the world and not yet procreated.
This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast.
Best quote of the night from the players that we got to speak to via Zoom came from Dalton Wagner, offensive lineman. He said, "We're sick and tired of being sick and tired." And that was in reference to the football program and the mockings and making fun ofs and all that crap that you've gotten the last couple of years being where the state of the program is. And I read a number of different websites in preparation for the show, just kind of forming together a rundown. One of the websites I read is ESPN.com, and in Mark Schlabaugh's college football preview, at the very end of it, he had this to say: Arkansas State is the best team in Arkansas. Okay, that one is too easy. Enjoy the games. Knowing that he was going to get a rise out of you as an Arkansas fan by stating that basically fact at this point because of where your football program is. Maybe by season's end, that will change. Your opinion will change on that. But even if you are a diehard Razorback fan, it's really hard to refute that Arkansas State hasn't been the best football program in the last couple years. But back to Dalton's point. We're sick and tired of being sick and tired. You as a fan can definitely resonate with that, how sick and tired you are of this football program just being down in the dumps, nowhere near where it's been, and the laughingstock of not only SEC, but the Power Five, much less college football. And that's where we'll start this morning, because I know you're tired of seeing it, I'm tired of talking about it, and I want to get back to relevancy within this sport. This is...
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, you're good, if you want to...
Let's not pretend, though, like everyone up there doesn't want to be relevant, too. Let's not pretend like they're not trying. Now, the last 2 years was just woefully bad. Bad leadership, players weren't bought in. Hopefully you fixed a lot of those basic issues that you've got to fix. But it's not like the players are enjoying any of this as well. The problem is, the reality is, what Schlabaugh is writing here is not, I don't know if it's 100% accurate right now in this snapshot, because I don't think Arkansas State's as good as they've been, but the reality is it's a conversation where 2 decades ago, 3 decades ago, it's never been a conversation most of our lifetimes. It's just the last 4 or 5 years, this program's gotten to a point where this conversation right here is not too far from reality if it's not reality. And that's the problem.
So it seems like you're pinning more of the blame just on the coaching staff, the recent inadequacies of the coaching staff.
Not the current coaching staff.
But the past couple of years.
Well, I mean, that's where it begins, right? That's the leadership of your program. That's who recruits the players. That's who coaches. That's who develops the players. And there wasn't enough recruiting, coaching, and developing with the last two staffs. So that's how you got it. I mean, how else did you arrive where you're at?
So the players didn't have anything to do with that.
Who recruited the players?
Boy,
where does it all begin? We're talking about the head of the fish here.
I realize that.
Where does a fish rot from?
I realize that.
A fish rots from the head.
What we always say about the Jimmys and Joes. Sometimes it's not about the X's and O's, about the Jimmy and Joes. And here's the thing about that. If the hand is on the other foot, if we're going to say, oh, look at these recruits that Arkansas brought in. What's going on? It's just the coaching, blah, blah, blah. And this is an argument you and I had, and John and I had, and Phil and I had. You can't take all of the blame and just throw it at the feet of the coaching staff. I'm so sick of people doing that. I don't think you're doing that, but I'm so sick of people, when it comes to this football program, just placing all the blame on Chad Morris and Joe Craddock and John Chavis, and then previously Brett Bielema, and just everyone else associated with the program the last couple of years. That's just not how it goes. And again, you are 100% right. It starts with the coaching staff. That is probably the biggest part of that. If you don't have a good head coach, you're not winning football games. But let's not act like the players up on that campus haven't had something to do with you sucking the last couple years. Because if I'm a football player that played at the University of Arkansas, basically from 2011 back, and I'm seeing where this football program is, and I'm just looking at it on a weekly or yearly basis. And I'm just like, what are we doing? Those players would tell you, yes, the coaching is a huge, massive part of all that. But at a certain point, as a football player at the University of Arkansas, you got to take some responsibility for yourself.
Sure.
Like, you are obviously the key cog in the station, general manager. But at a certain point, I have to buck up and take responsibility if something goes wrong. And I always joke, hey, all the blame comes back to you if I mess up. That's 100% a joke, a fallacy.
The credit goes to you if it goes right.
Exactly. And listen, that's more of a quarterback type of thing. But at the end of the day, I'm so sick and tired of just being like, oh, it's just the coach's fault.
Well, I mean,
that's crap. That's just not true.
You're sick and tired of losing. You're sick and tired of the results. That's the problem. You don't have a lot of blame to spread around when the results are good. Problem is, the results have been putrid for a while now. So, I mean, everybody's frustrated. But my point, let's not pretend like the players and the coaches aren't trying to get it right. They don't want to. I mean, let's see. We haven't given this program, this set of staff, with this group of players a chance yet. You know, and I don't know that you're going to see, boy, a remarkable turnaround on September 26th. This is going to be a process. This is going to be more of a marathon than a sprint, to borrow the cliche. We're not going to have all the answers in 2 weeks, or a little over 2 weeks. So, I hear frustration in your voice. That's what I hear.
I just hear frustration
because you're tired of being slapped around, pushed around by these national blowhards that want to say, oh, you're not even the best program in a state like Arkansas. And Arkansas, you only wear shoes and have electric. Huh?
Well,
I mean, because you're just tired of always putting the back seat in the trunk, you know, of college football.
Okay, and listen, you can go across the country on different sports radio stations and stuff, and there are people that put in work. They put in effort, but they don't put in enough. They don't do the extra mile. They don't do enough. That doesn't mean they don't like losing in the rating books or like having a crappy radio show. It's not just sports. It's applicable to everywhere. That doesn't mean you're doing enough. From the player standpoint, they have not been. If we're centraling down, if we're just going out to players solo, if we're just looking at the blame that should be placed on the players, they have not done enough the last couple years. And again, we always go back, hey, that past is the past. You got to change it. But again, we cannot just completely displace the blame and put it 100% at the feet of the coaches. They have not done enough the last couple of years. The former players would get up and tell you that. Oh, listen, coaching staff's been terrible, but let's not just overlook players. Sometimes great players can overcome coaching gaffes. That just happens. You haven't had that the last couple of years. You haven't players that had put in the extra mile, or you haven't had a whole selection of players. Maybe it's one or two that are doing what it takes to be an Arkansas Razorback. Because you cannot, as an Arkansas Razorback football program, just walk on the field and put in the same amount of time and effort as an Alabama, as an LSU, Georgia, Florida, and on and on, because you're not as talented. Period. End of story, end of the day. You have to go the extra mile. You have to do the extra workout. You have to do the extra practice rep. Or it's going to be continuous what you've had the last couple years. Period. They have not put in the extra work that it takes to be an Arkansas Razorback. At all. And yes, that's frustration coming out. Mm-hmm. And I hope this new crop of players doesn't. It's put up or shut up time.
Yeah.
So, I don't want to be 10 years from now talking about a 2-10 football team. You as a fan don't want to listen to me talk about a 2-10 football team in 10 years. We can't displace just all the blame and put it at the feet of the coaches.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Try the new Bud Light Lemonade, a premium light lager brewed with real lemonade.
Now he does a tightrope act. Boy, Houdini's in the house. We're number 3. And nobody's home to watch that house. Touchdown, Hogs!
Former Razorback Jason Peters was set to move inside on the Philadelphia Eagles, play left guard. He's moving back to left tackle, unfortunately due to an injury on one of their offensive linemen. And I bring up Jason Peters because Marcus Henderson, at 6'5", 300 pounds, tested out at tight end yesterday. They moved him, changed his number to number 83. And I can only imagine a 6'5", 300-pound guy, Arkansas, that would bring back memories of Jason Peters back in the day. He was 80. Was he 80 back in the day?
His number?
Yeah.
I don't remember. But, I mean, he was, you know, you look at all the guys that have went pro out of Arkansas. He may have had, he's probably had at least a top three career of any Razorback, maybe the best career of any Razorback in the NFL.
I'd say he's a Hall of Famer based
well,
on his...
Yeah, definitely. I think definitely that based on his career, but I'm just talking about
80, yeah.
You know, length of time, and then also, you know, he's made a ton of money in his career as well. So,
and I think they're, I don't know if they have yet, I haven't double checked on that, but I think they're reorchestrating his contract because he's taking less money to go inside because mm-hmm. they re-signed him, and now he's going back, and left tackle is far more valuable a position and far more difficult than the left guard position. So interesting to see what happens for the Eagles. And just, I mean, the tide, what this tells me, they have no idea what's going on. We talk about the linebacker position, and maybe I'm miscalculating a little bit, but this to me, I mean, you moved Blaine Toll back and forth. Apparently Hudson can't block. Like, this to me shows that you have no idea who's going to play the tight end position.
Well, it tells me that, you know, tight ends, it's such a versatile position. I mean, and we're talking about Jason Peters. He played tight end here at Arkansas. He's played tackle in the league for a number of years now at guard. You know, versatile guy, but it's half blocking, half pass catching, and that's a unique set of skills. Arkansas has produced as a state quite a few great tight ends, you know, with Jeremy Sprinkle, Henry. I mean, go down the list, DJ Williams. I mean, you know, going all the way back to Davenport. Arkansas's had a good Greg, you know, Chino Gray. You just keep going through the list. All of them Arkansas guys. So this has been a state that's had a lot of really good tight ends come through and become great Razorbacks. It's just hard to find that complete skill set that, hey, you can block and get a good chip off of a defensive end of the SEC, and you can also catch a pass as well.
And be fast enough to beat a linebacker or sometimes match mm-hmm. up against a safety or whatever. It's a combination of attributes that very few have, but the lucky ones, as Tommy mentioned, when you have a DJ Williams and a Hunter Henry, both Mackey Award winners, definitely stands out when it comes to those guys. Former Razorback Steph Welsh is doing something really cool out in Virginia. It's really difficult right now for players with summer ball and stuff getting canceled. Like, many of these players are on the brink of, hey, am I going to get a scholarship offer? Am I going to play at this school? What am I going to get? Well, he's helping these kids out with these opportunities with a new league that he's doing. 88 players across Virginia will make up 8 teams and battle in 3 sessions in October and November. So I thought this was a really good story from former Razorback Steph Welsh, that he's kind of organizing a league together so these kids have an opportunity to show coaches what they can do and hopefully get some exposure when it comes to getting recruited and getting the scholarship at the next level.
Yeah, you know, and with COVID and everything, you've got to get a little more creative in how you do this. We've seen with technology events even before COVID. I've been to a few camps and things that I've worked at that you've seen where coaches could log in and watch games, and they were streamed live because the technology is now there. So this is utilizing the technology we have today and the coach's ability or desire to log in and see these guys. I know Muss has tweeted out, and we've seen some talk on social media in the past from him watching games on the internet throughout the weekends as summer ball kind of got back underway. So this is just another way to get yourself out there as a prospect to these coaches.
It's called the Scene Circuit is what it's titled. So really cool to see Steph Welsh, former Razorback, set that up and organize it.
You know, 5 years ago, this probably, I mean, it might have been possible because the bandwidth was just now starting to get around. Now we got enough internet everywhere to make this work, and the technology's evolved to the point where I think this is going to become the way. We look at athletic departments, and I know we're going to get to the story later on about Arkansas needing to borrow some money to kind of keep everything afloat for the short term. How they recruit, all not just Arkansas, all of these universities moving forward, you're going to see them, I think, more interested in events they can look at online, go back and watch recorded sessions. I'll be interested to see how the NCAA changes policies and guidelines around recruiting to allow more of this type of thing to happen, just to curb expenses.
I would hope that they're going to do whatever it takes to just help these kids get an opportunity to play at the college level.
You can look at more kids if you do it this way, too. I mean, a coach can only be in one gym in one city mm-hmm. at a time. Maybe if you go to Dallas and they're on their own plane, they mean Dallas, Houston, and San Antonio on a weekend or somewhere. But you can't be in 3 different time zones. you know, with the technology today, you can look at a lot of kids in a lot of different places as more of these events are put to where kids can play games online.
Mm-hmm. Listed some good news for Arkansas for a former Razorback. Got some bad news as well. Andrew Benintendi, who's been sidelined with a strained right rib cage. He's been out since August 11th. He is now out for the season. He's had a terrible year, to be honest. He's hitting 103, zero home runs, one RBI. And this is coming off a couple years when he was Red Sox, when he was tearing it up. But unfortunate to see Andrew Benintendi kind of not have a good season and then just being pulled out for the rest of the way.
Yeah, that is bad news because we always want to root and see our former Razorbacks do well. It hadn't been a very good season for Boston anyway. Were they 14-29? Just looking up real quick on my phone after their loss to the Phillies last night. So this is probably also a good decision to shut him down in a year that appears to be going nowhere for the Red Sox.
Yeah, just not a good year for old Benny, which is kind of tough. I saw this was kind of interesting. The University of Colorado and Point Bets signed the first ever deal between an NCAA program and a sports book. What they're doing is they're building their U.S. headquarters in Denver, which is very close to Boulder, and it's going to start, legal betting started in May. This, to me, I saw this headline, I was just like, whoa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw you had this down, and it made me take a step back, too, because the NCAA stance on betting is pretty well known that they are anti-gambling, anti-casino, anti-anything involving sports gambling in college. They've tried to get legislation passed that would even prohibit gambling lines on college games. They do not embrace it at all. So I find this interesting that, you know, because Colorado's not the only state that's got live sports gambling. I mean, it's been in Vegas and in Atlantic City for a number of years, but it's around the country now. It's here in Arkansas. First one to make a deal, though. I want to know more about this and then what the NCAA's response to this perhaps will be.
Yeah. One more quick headline for you. Unfortunate news. I know Tommy's a fan of this. My dad and I are both fans of this. This coming from Sports Business Journal that Hank Williams Jr., All My Rowdy Friends Are Here on Monday Night, has been dropped by ESPN. Instead, they're going to play Rip It Up by Little Richard.
Well, it's Saturday night and I just got paid. Money, don't try to save. My heart said go, go. Have a time on Saturday night. Nah, feel fine. Gonna rock it up.
Not a bad song. Like, I enjoy fine, it. But here's the thing. This is what they did this. ESPN executives, again, this is from Sports Business Journal, felt that All My Rowdy Friends on here on Monday night would not resonate for games that were contested in mainly empty stadiums.
And they have moved away from this before and then come back. If you move away, that makes it, I guess, maybe a little more special easier when you come back to have that nostalgic feeling. But, yeah, Hank and the intro to Monday Night Football has been something that's, you know, that was, to me as a kid, when, you know, when Al Michaels and the late Frank Gifford and Dan Dierdorf did the games, that was really the first Monday Night crew I remember that had the helmets ramming into each other and exploding, and Hank, and they were the first ones to really do anything like that. Then Sunday Night Football did Carrie Underwood. I mean, it makes a production out of it, makes it special. So yeah, it is noteworthy to, I think, a lot of fans when that changes, because that, you know, hey, I gotta get my chair here, I gotta get my recliner set because football's starting, as Hank's on, you know.
Yeah, and this
it was kind of an appointment part of the TV.
It exactly was. My dad, when he wasn't a Monday Night Football guy, but he would legitimately turn on the television just for that song and then go in the other room while we watched an hour, 30 minutes of the game before we went to bed when I was a kid. So I think it's been going on since 1998 on ABC. And then, as Tommy mentioned, they pulled it for a couple years and then they brought it back because they didn't like some of the comments that Hank Williams Jr. said. So I was just really bummed to see that headline, especially as a guy that grew up listening to that song, You Longer Than I. So it's definitely, yep, definitely hurts for us both.
All right, those are your quick-hitting headlines this morning, brought to you by Standard Materials Group. They have immediate openings right now for ready-mix drivers in Northwest Arkansas. So if you have a CDL license and you're listening this morning and your license does not have an automatic restriction, you want to be home every night, your current job doesn't have you doing that, you want to work with a company that's got great pay, great benefits, a great team environment, and the opportunity for growth within a great company, hey, go to jobs.crh.com. Again, that's jobs.crh.com. A great company that's inclusive, diverse, got individuals from all kinds of backgrounds that you'll find at Standard Materials Group, and they welcome minorities and females to apply as well. Again, jobs.crh.com. Standard Materials Group is an equal opportunity employer.
I guess the last quickie headline that we need to get to is finally.
I'm sorry.
Finally. No, it's okay. I had it written down. Finally, Tommy, Keeping Up with the Kardashians is coming to an end. Unfortunately, and this is from Kim Kardashian, it is with the heavy hearts that we've made the difficult decision as a family to say goodbye to Keeping Up with the Kardashians. So unfortunately, you as sports radio listeners and fans, you won't get to hear stuff like this.
Yeah, you should really take it slow.
Didn't you get married both times after a couple of months?
I want to flat.
You guys lose your butts. We may all lose their money. I don't even think she knows what gluten is. I don't. Do you?
No.
Does anybody?
She needs us right now.
I think an email would be sufficient.
I feel like someone sent us a free yoga membership.
Thank God, you would have never been able to afford it.
I cannot believe we don't get that television drama anymore after 2021. It's just a true shame. A true shame that we don't get that.
I can proudly and honestly say, in 14 years, I've watched maybe 5 minutes collectively of that show.
That's more than I have. Yeah. So I guess props to you for... what is it called? Cinema? I don't know what you call that. So I just
maybe
call it
scenery.
Yeah, that's probably a better term for it. All right, 877-377-6963, the number to call or text in. Kagan is in Piggott, wants to talk about the tight end position that's kind of up in the air right now. Kagan, you're on the Morning Rush, man.
How y'all doing this morning?
And it's a Wednesday, about halfway through the week.
Yeah. Yep, I hadn't talked to y'all in a couple of weeks, so I figured I'd call in. So I've seen about the Marcus Henderson, you know, getting moved over there to tight end. I wonder if that's just for blocking purposes, or is this dude that athletic? I mean, do y'all have any of the story, or all you know is the swap numbers move that?
I was listening to the Zoom last night. Kyle Parkinson talked about it at the beginning, who's the strategic information director at the University of Arkansas, also something associate athletic director, I always forget it, but he told us like at the beginning, then like reassessed it at the end. You know, it's tough, Kagan, because we're not at like the 15 minutes you get, it's hard to pick up on stuff, but what I take is they have no idea who's going to play tight end. There's guys like Hudson's got the hands, Blaine's probably got the physicality. There's probably some other guys that have other attributes that they like, but they can't find one guy to do it all. They can't find one guy with all the traits.
They're all in one pack.
Exactly. Right. Which is, again, Tommy brought it up earlier. The tight end's one of the most unique positions in football. You're asked to block an SEC caliber defensive end. You got to be able to run a route like a wide receiver, and you got to have hands too. And there's some, again, other stuff that you got to be able to do, but that's pretty unique, man. You're not going to find many those caliber SEC tight ends on a it's difficult.
You probably got a Julius Coates on every SEC team, you know, someone like him or Dorian Gerald on every SEC team.
Yeah.
You're going to have to be able to block that guy, or you're in trouble.
In fact, there might be ones better out there in this league. Perhaps.
You're probably right.
Perhaps there's ones better. Yeah. Yeah, I mean.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Kagan, the other thing is, Arkansas's had to use the tight end at times the last few years because of the offensive line as an extra tackle. And I think they're just looking for toughness and blocking, but all in one package. And we've seen times where Arkansas didn't have enough at wide receiver. They've lined tight ends up when Hunter was there, back with A.J. Derby, put them in the slot role and H-back roles and in different spots other than just hand down next to the tackle, because they were your better football players. I don't think that's where Arkansas is at right now, but I think they're looking for toughness. Someone at that position that can provide the toughness you need, particularly when it comes to the blocking assignments.
Maybe the other teams won't notice the 300-pounder subbing in for a pass play running across the field.
Yeah, and Marcus was a 4-star guy. I wanted to make sure he's out of Memphis. I mean, this is a good football player. Pittman's talked about him a little bit as a freshman that's standing out. And there's the idea that you have as a football coach, basketball coach, baseball coach, you just need to get your best players on the field. Now, Marcus is playing offensive tackle in high school. He's probably more suited to play offensive tackle. But if he's a really good football player and he needs to be on the field, then you kind of just make do with what you have. And if he thinks he can play tight end, if Pittman thinks he can play tight end, if Davis thinks he can play tight end, and Cooper. It's John Cooper's their their tight ends coach. Then you put him at tight end. That's just what you do. So, and it's not.
Hey,
it's not going to be
the man. So
yeah. So
whatever he says, if he says that guy can play running back or quarterback, he's going to be in that position. I guarantee you that.
Yeah. Appreciate the call this morning, Kagan. This is a text from Caleb in Darnell from earlier. He says Henderson at tight end isn't a bad idea. In my opinion, he may be one of the best five offensive linemen we have, but he doesn't have enough experience to play inside or right tackle. So what do you do with one of the best players on the field? You move him into a position that he can be used as a run blocker or at certain times a pass blocker. And it gives so much hope and encouragement the length of the staff is willing to do to get the best players on the football field, which is kind of the same point that I was addressing. You just find a position for him. If he's a good football player, but you don't think he's ready for a certain position, you throw him in a tight. If it works, it works. And again, it was one practice yesterday. Maybe they decide, listen, he's better off just suited to be an offensive lineman. Maybe something comes out of it. There's no harm or foul in trying this, at least.
No, and you still have, what are we down to, 21 days now? What are we at, 22 days?
17.
17. I can lose track all the time. I know it's 2 weeks from Saturday. But, you've still got some time to figure some things out. But what it tells me, and I think what you're saying here is, they still don't have it figured out at tight end. They still haven't settled into, here's our starter. And then also, what about the times when you might have the desire in a short yardage or goal line situation, or for whatever reason, you want to bring two tight ends on the field, put a different personnel group out there with double tight ends? There's times we've seen Arkansas do that in the past. I would imagine that would be part of what Kendall Briles would want to do sparingly this year with this offense.
And I can't remember if McQuan, at one point Baylor had a 400-pound tight end, and I don't remember Briles was still there. His name was Lance McQuan. They said hit the Quan, that when he would score a touchdown, they would start playing hit the Quan. I think it was Lance McQuan. I'm going to look it up a little bit, but listen, we talked about Jason Peters a little while ago. Some guys are just big and they're athletic. Marcus is 6'5", 300. I can't tell you about his 40 or anything like that. But even though some guys are a little bigger, it doesn't stop their feet from moving a little bit.
And the fact that they're searching and working to get this right tells me they plan on utilizing the tight end a lot in their offense this year. But I think as much as anything, when you're going up, you know, with 10 SEC games, you're going to depend on tight ends to help with defensive ends a lot as well. So I think that's, they're looking for someone that's got the blocking skills, probably, and this is just me guessing, the blocking skills may be just a bit more important than the pass catching skills right now.
Yeah, and I think just as an offensive line unit, the last couple of years, you haven't had guys, particularly on the offensive line, that have been that have held their own in blocking. But I would think that you're trying to protect Felipe Franks as much as possible. So maybe you don't send out that fifth guy in a route. You keep him in for protection, whether it's using a Marcus Henderson, using a Blaine Toll, depending on if Hudson blocks, like whatever you're going to do. That's something that Kendall Briles and the rest of his staff is going to have to figure out, is do we have a guy that we trust to be able to block in that position group as a tight end? Because as Kagan brought up, he mentioned Dorian Gerald. He mentioned Julian Coates. Julius Coates. Julius is 6'7". I don't know his weight. Dorian's a beast as well. But you're going up against some of the best, if not the best, guys in college football on the defensive line. I remember a couple years back, LSU had like guys like Arden Key. Think about like Glenn Dorsey, some of the Alabama offensive linemen, Jonathan Williams. I mean, there's just, it's unbelievable the position groups that you have to go against on a weekly basis here in the SEC. And defensive line and the offensive line, that's really where you make your money in this conference. Those guys you're going to be going against are going to be as tough as nails, as quick as lightning. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be an easy task for whatever guy ends up getting that starting tight end position.
Clay had Julius Coates listed at 6'6", 281 back in June in Hogs Illustrated on his presumed depth chart at that point. So it gives you an idea. And these are, I mean, nothing with Coates or Gerald, but there's going to be some All-Americans you'll face on the defensive line this year that Arkansas is going to have to deal with in this league multiple weeks. So Arkansas is not at a point where, hey, you're facing the best defensive line in the league in practice every day. That's not the case. So if you can't block these guys, you're going to have some real difficulties down the road.
And the Baylor tight end, I was thinking about it, I just found it. It's Laquan McGowan.
There you go.
400 pounds at the tight end position. I remember I watched him score in a football game, and it was a fat guy touchdown. It was one of the most beautiful. Think Sebastian Tratola lining up at the tight end position. And he was only like 360? I think that got him down a little bit, but it was unbelievable. It was like the bus times three.
Not old enough to remember. Do you remember, or have you seen some old clips of the fridge, William
the fridge.
Perry?
Yeah, William Perry,
in
the refrigerator.
The Bears. In the mid-80s, the 85 Bears. That was the best maybe fat guy touchdowns. They'd bring him in, short yardage, goal line, and you couldn't stop the fridge.
I watched the ESPN 30 for 30 documentary on with them? McMahon,
Bears, yeah.
Ditka, and all those guys. Yeah. It's been a while since I've watched it, but I remember just I enjoy watching that team.
So as a kid.
I enjoy watching fat guy touchdowns because I think they're really appreciated. Yes, a touchdown's appreciated regardless who scores in a Razorback uniform, but when you see someone who might be a little thicker, you appreciate it a little more.
Yeah, I remember the Super Bowl Shuffle. I had the T-shirt one when I was a kid for the Super Bowl Shuffle. I wasn't a big Bears fan, but I was a fan of that team with Jim McMahon and all. You know, it was great.
Didn't he go to like BYU? Like a school that you're like?
I don't think that's right.
He looks. What school did he go to?
You might be right. I don't know.
He went to a school where you just looked at him and was like, "There's no way that you went to college there."
Square peg, round hole deal. So,
Brigham Young.
Brigham Young. Yeah.
And
I would
does
not
that
have
guy
guessed,
look like a Brigham Young quarterback?
Does he act like
a
Brigham
Young? I guess Steve
Young
doesn't really look like it either. So
you're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Try the new Bud Light Lemonade, a light and flavorful beer for those easy drinking occasions.
The crowd's into it. They just threw him out of the game. He's gotten his second technical, and he's been thrown out of the ballgame.
Welcome back into the Morning Rush. Want to go to the phone lines and welcome in Bobby Carpenter of ESPN, also co-host of the Morning Juice out of Columbus, Ohio. Bobby, appreciate you making some time for us this morning, man.
Oh, thank you for having me on. It's a pleasure.
So I wanted to start with your morning show. I know you were doing, I'm forgetting if it was a midday show or mid-afternoon show, but what's the transition been like for you to morning radio?
Well, you know, I always thought I'd be able to work out in the morning, and I'm a guy that, you know, once I got to college, I met my good friend A.J. Hawk. We kind of started working out before class. It was the only time that we knew we could get consistent time every day. You know, wake up at 5:15, go work out, start your day. And I never thought I'd have a job that would prohibit that from being the case. And so now when you start at 6 a.m., you usually have our calls and stuff a little bit in the morning before. So I get up about 4:15, 4:30. I can't get like a full lift in, but I try to get like a 20-minute jog real quick around the block a couple times, a couple miles in there, and then gives me the energy to kind of push through the rest of the day. So it's been a little different. Obviously, morning drive is unique, and your time spent listening and people getting in out of their cars, so you're kind of recycling some things. But it's been fun, man, and bringing the energy. And it's things not talking about actual football, but at least hypothetical situations, which the Big Ten could potentially be playing in.
All right, Ty, we got to pick it up because we get up at 4:32, Bobby, and we're not jogging 20 minutes or 2 minutes. Ty, we're slackers, I guess.
I will say, Bobby, on the note of working out in the morning, I initially told myself when I started doing the morning gig, hey, I'll get up every once in a while and do what you're talking about, maybe a mile or two. Safe to say I have yet to do that.
Well, I mean, I think I'm like 20 or 16 shows in, 16 shows in right now, and thankfully, I've gotten up every day and done a little bit of something, whether it's 15 minutes on the stationary bike or whatever it could be. I always keep my alarm set, though, at the same time. Like, if I don't do this one day, it's going to be a slippery slope real quick.
Bobby is a former Big Ten football player. Just want to get your thoughts on the conference's decision to postpone the season and just how they went about it, including what information they revealed to the public following that decision.
Well, I don't think anybody would have had a problem if, I go back to my 10th grade American or English lit teacher, where she said DFR, details, facts, and reasons. For anything you're putting together, we always need to know why you're doing it and give me evidence that backs it up. And that really wasn't provided with Kevin Warren. And, he just kind of said, we're going to postpone it. No details as to why, other than kind of the pandemic and the fact that there's a lot of uncertainty. Well, those things are true, but those might be true in the spring. There was no quantifiable data saying, well, these are the numbers for these things right here. These are the metrics. And if they can get to this point by the spring, we'll play. Or if they get to this point at some point in the season, we'll play. And it was just, And then he issued the letter a couple days later, or about a week later, and said, well, you know, referencing like global numbers. Like, that doesn't apply to the footprint of what's going on. I understand there's issues around the globe, but like, talk about what's going on in the immediacy of your footprint. They talked about the myocarditis, but there's a lot of conflicting data about that. Unfortunately, one of the nice things, I actually live within about a half-mile radius of three cardiologists, so we're all at a derby party on Saturday night. So I've just been pumping these guys for information on everything, trying to hammer on them the best I can. And, you know, I not that there's not severe side effects and things that can happen from it, but the likelihood of those occurring, especially in young, healthy adults, it just are very slim. And, in fact, one of them's coaching his high school or his son's middle school team. And so, you know, I think that he understands the risk probably better than anybody and feels comfortable moving forward.
Bobby, in your opinion, how much different would business have been handled if Jim Delaney had been there for another year and Kevin Warren had been thrown feet and head first into this fire of 2020 as the new commissioner?
Well, I think it would have been handled differently. At least I hope so. And that's a guy who has a lot more experience, who's been in college, where you look at Kevin Warren. I mean, he came from the NFL. I don't think he fully understands the ramifications and the negative blowback of some of his actions. And all of a sudden, he's coming out saying, I didn't realize that people would be this upset. I mean, how could you not realize that you're taking away football out of an area of the country where four of the largest 10 stadiums in the country reside in that conference? Like, there's a reason why Ohio State, Penn State, Michigan, Nebraska are so big. So it was just crazy to kind of see that. I think Jim Delaney may have been a little stronger with the presidents, maybe putting forth, you know, a plan as to why it would be beneficial to play now. But it's a tough spot for Kevin Warren, but obviously I don't think he handled it very well at all.
Give our audience some perspective on what the fans' feedback has been like. And you mentioned it being such a big deal, when the fact is they're going to play NFL football this coming weekend. High school football in Ohio is being played. Michigan, it will be played soon. But yet Big Ten colleges aren't playing. What has been the response from the fans that you get to call into your show and the ones you interact with on social media? Give our audience that perspective.
Oh, it's been infuriating. You can have little league playing, you can have high school, middle school, you can have professional teams play, but in your own footprint, and even some cases, you mentioned, you know, Pennsylvania, and you have Pitt playing, but not Penn State. You can have Cincinnati playing, but not Ohio State. You can have Notre Dame playing, but not Indiana or Purdue. And so that's where we were trying to rationalize these decisions that are made and understanding, like, why? Why is this happening? And what information do you have that no one else possesses?
Talking with Bobby Carpenter of ESPN Radio on The Morning Rush. Bobby, you had the perspective of playing at a Big Ten university at Ohio State. Just your overall thoughts how important football was to your career, not only inside of football, but outside as well.
Well, I'll start with the financial implications and the financial impact for some of these players. And there's guys at the Big Ten who maybe are projected as second or third round draft picks. And this year they could, you know, through their play and their merit, could end up being a first round draft pick. And that's millions of dollars. You know, even if you're going from a fourth or fifth to a second or third, I mean, that's millions of dollars. It's transformational wealth. And so the counter that always people push back, I mean, well, that's just like few and it's not money, it's all this and that. Well, okay, even outside of that, people who aren't playing sports. One of my good friends, his daughter's a gymnast at Ohio State. Like she is borderline depressed. Like, this is the longest she's ever gone without training. She loves it, and this is being taken away from her. Like, she would be more than willing to help go out there and compete. So when so much of these young people's lives and their identities are tied in and wrapped up in this, and then you take it away and you're really not giving any reasons other than risk and uncertainty, nothing that's actually quantifiable, it's very, very difficult to be able to handle that. And I look back at some of, like, the most formative things that have happened in my life and how they've impacted me, and a lot of them have happened in team sports, and they've happened on the football field, and then they have happened in the locker room. And the ability to be able, in an age right now where there's a lot of social unrest, like, some of the people who I was able to meet and become good friends with and understand a little bit more about their life, and then understand a little bit more about mine. Those things transpired because of football, and no other reason, because that was the connecting bridge that allowed us to get to know each other. And so that's the stuff that's being taken away right now, and it just really, really hurts me to see that happen, because I know how important it is to these young men.
Bobby, you mentioned your life experience while playing football. I think that probably shaped a lot of your beliefs, and I know that a lot of people have been asking for players to be vocal on certain issues, whether political, whether social. Why does it seem that they don't want these players to voice if they want to play college football or not this fall?
You know, that's been the biggest question I think that's been perplexing everybody is, we're at an age now where a lot of these young people in college, you know, they speak out and they speak their mind on a lot of different issues. But when it comes to their future, you don't let them have a say in that. And that they need to be protected because they don't know. Like, you need to protect them from their own poor decision-making. Even though it's, you know, they've sat down and a lot of these schools, the parents are on board with their sons and the decisions they're going to make. And even their daughters, their decisions to play other sports. So that is one of the biggest ironies of all of this is the fact that, you know, they have a bigger voice than ever. They have the opportunity now to share that voice, and everybody wants to listen, except for when they have a dissenting opinion about maybe what their administration thinks, and that you don't know the risk that you're taking. Well, yeah, we talk to doctors. We receive some of the best medical care in the country. Our parents are on board with it, and this is our risk profile, and we want to do something that maybe there is a little bit heightened risk. There's a lot of heightened risk playing football for a lot of sports at a collegiate level, but we think the upside far outweighs the down.
All right, so crystal ball this thing for us, Bobby. When does Big Ten football return to the field for competitive play?
Well, if it doesn't return in the fall, I don't think it returns until the fall of 2021. I think the spring was, you know, was a pipe dream, the postponement of pushing that off. Like, I don't think that there was really grounded in reality. They said, who delays something without having a plan for why it was delayed or when it can restart? There's no quantifiable metrics used in there. And so I think there's a big push this week to try to get some sort of meaningful football played in the Big Ten. If it doesn't happen by Friday, I don't think it's happening until the fall of 2021. And so that's why you're seeing now that the Michigan State, or the Speaker of the House for the state of Michigan, coming out, writing letters to Kevin Warren. They need to direct some of that at Mark Shishel, their own president. I mean, these people that are in Congress who are elected officials, their constituents want to see it, their players want to see it. Like, give them the opportunity to make that own choice. So it's going to come down. If it doesn't happen by Friday, where they can get, they vote to play, they get their request into the White House to be able to get the testing that they need. If it doesn't happen by then, I don't think it's happening at all.
So if that is the case, if by Friday they can't figure it out, and it is a year from now that they actually get back on, what are the financial implications for most schools in the Big Ten? Missing football for a year, the dollars that come in just solely from football is, in the Big Ten, reported as much as $100 million. What are the financial implications for the institutions as a whole?
Oh, massive cutting of sports and restrictions of budgets. I mean, the college landscape will be irrevocably changed in the Big Ten because you're not, once you drop sports, you don't add them again. And so, you know, I've heard numbers at Ohio State between 10 and 14, even up to 16 potentially varsity sports would be cut. And once they're cut, they're not coming back. Like, there's just a ton of issues like that that's going to restrict the opportunity for other people to compete in things they love. And I don't think anybody wants to see that happen.
Bobby, we've talked a lot of college football to this point, but you're on Operation Football on Sundays. Do you go into the shark-infested waters and play fantasy football with Field Yates and other NFL analysts?
You know, I played fantasy with a couple of those guys before, and I did a morning fantasy show a few years back, and I actually finished second in it. You know, but I'm a guy that plays one fantasy team a year. I don't have enough bandwidth. Some of these guys get in like six fantasy leagues. I'm like, you're cheering against yourself in half of them now, and like, you already have your team, and the other guys going against the team that you actually like. I mean, it's just, there's so much going on there. I take one team, and I'll dive into it. And I'll put a decent amount of time in it and hope that everything works out.
In our fantasy league, I'm like you. I only compete in one league, and it's a do-or-die league. The loser of our league, Bobby, this year, has to do the Joey Chestnut Hot Dog Challenge. 76 hot dogs over the course of a week. If you fail week one, you got to try it week two. If you fail week two, you're kicked out of the league. Just kind of your overall thoughts as we close you down here on the Morning Rush on our fantasy football punishment.
I mean, we're talking about long-term health ramifications of COVID, like, and you're talking about pounding down 76 hot dogs in a week, like, and then doing it for a second week if you don't pass. Like, the amount of nitrates, cholesterol, just the processed meat that you would be consuming. And I mean, I'm a guy that loves some food meats, but you know, 76 hot dogs with a bun, like, I can't
my joints, I would be swollen. I'd look like the marshmallow man. I don't know if I'd be able to get out and run anymore in the morning. So that's a stiff punishment. Ours for last place at ESPN was just like you had to write a song about the other people, like a little rap, and then produce, put it out on air. Yours is much, much more difficult, and I feel bad for whoever loses, but I respect the punishment.
Bobby Carpenter, co-host of The Morning Juice. Also, you can hear him Sundays here on ESPN Radio Operation Football, as well as watch him on Get Up in the mornings on ESPN. Bobby, we really appreciate your time this morning, man, and hopefully the Big Ten will have that big decision come Friday, and we'll see some football up north.
Well, thanks for having me on, Jim. I appreciate it.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Try the new Bud Light Lemonade with half the sugar and carbs of Mike's Hard.
A bright red Razorback caravan is headed to Nebraska, and this time, we're coming for the whole damn thing.
Bobby Petrino in all his glory.
Hey, it's Boomer, right? Good to be here. We're getting ready for our opening game at Oklahoma on September 12th. Okay, Boomer, the first thing you need to do is focus on hitting your target. Let's see what you got. That's good. You can get a little bit more power behind it, though. Really let this one fly. Oh, no! Our team is excited about playing three football games this fall. It all starts this weekend at OU and continues with two against Central Arkansas.
Go Bears!
So Boomer is the Missouri State mascot, and during this video, Coach Petrino is teaching Boomer how to throw a football. Unfortunately, he throws it through the athletic director's or president's office.
I'm not sure who that was at Missouri State.
Who cares? But
some guy in a tie.
It was quite a hilarious video. And the reactions of this from Arkansas fans were hysterical. I was a little disappointed in our boy Tyler Wilson. I sent him this last night, and I was like, I figured you'd appreciate this, and didn't get a text back. But I figured that would be something that him, Ryan, Casey, and some of the other quarterbacks, that Lamar, some of the other guys that have played under Bobby Petrino. Because my guess is that's not typically what a quarterback session looks like.
No,
when
probably not.
Bobby is teaching them something.
But his deadpan monotone, oh no, here we go. The motorcycle went off in the ditch. Here, Boomer, throw the football. I mean, like zero inflection. But you put a football in the air? Or a referee with a flag on the ground, he's got plenty of inflection.
That was a good impression. I like that. That's pretty good.
You know, when the cameras are on like that, he just doesn't have it. But boy, you see it in the game. He's got plenty of vocal range, so to speak. So yeah,
especially directed at
three games. Now they're going to play two of their three games against Central Arkansas. One in Conway, one in Springfield, and of course this weekend on pay per view against Oklahoma. It's just a weird year we're in, but a three game season. Two here and said that this weekend, I think it's September, I think the same weekend Arkansas plays on the 26th. They go to Conway then
sometime in October.
Sometime in October is their last game in a three game. Well, I think that'd be hard to keep your team all together and practicing and going through all of this for three games and two of them against the same team.
Brent Spiro texting in, Oklahoma's going to win that game 56-14. That'll be the first game that we get to see Spencer Rattler, the highly phenom quarterback, starting. And I'm really excited to see that. On the note of Bobby Petrino, I got to go back to this text from JT a little earlier in the program because it really got me hot and bothered this morning. And I love JT. JT in Hot Springs is one of my favorite textures. I don't know if he's ever called in before, but he said, and I just, this is one of the dumbest texts that we've ever received on this program. And technically, Bobby Petrino was a bad hire for us. Yes, we got two great seasons, but had we made a different hire in 2007 and just a solid hire, maybe we don't have the great seasons in 2010, 2011, but I highly doubt that we have 3-0-8 seasons over the last seven seasons. Again, I love you, JT in Hot Springs. I know you're probably listening to the program right now, but that's the dumbest text that we've received in quite some time. Here's why. You can take the positives and negatives of any coach, of any situation, blah, blah, blah. That's almost the equivalent of saying, you know what, Nick Saban wasn't that great hire at Alabama because Alabama is going to take a nosedive once he leaves the program because no one's going to live up to that level of expectation. That's basically what you're saying. To say that Bobby Petrino was technically a bad hire Is that the most ignorant? Like, is,
well, I see where he's coming from. Was the 2 years of greatness worth the 7 years of pain?
That's not all Petrino's fault. Are we really going to blame the last seven years on Bobby Petrino?
He set you down that path. He set you down that course. And a lot of it had to do with the timing of when it happened. In April, who were you going to hire? You ended up with John L. because of that. And then,
please tell me you're not buying into this.
I'm just saying there is... Don't say there's zero merit to it. Was the 2 years of greatness worth the 7 or so years of pain we've had?
He didn't cause the 7 years, though. Not at all.
Okay.
He did the whatever in a ditch. He had the affair.
Mm-hmm.
He got fired. He did not cause 2012, 2013, 2016.
He had no bearing on how 2012 played out.
He did not. He directly was not the coach of that football team. Yes, listen, he did play a role in how. Mm-hmm. But if you want to stop the train in 2013, I'm okay with that. But to say that he was the problem for the next 7 years. 7 years.
I'm just saying he sent you down a certain course.
Listen, I'm okay if you say 2012 and 2013. Okay. If you want to stop it there.
Okay.
After that.
Well, I agree. At some point, it's got to go. But to say it was all roses, it all came up roses with Petrino would be a falsehood, too.
No question about it. But I just, the idea that technically Bobby Petrino was a bad hire. I can't get on that statement. That's what JT was saying this morning. So we were having fun earlier, and then I got riled up. Let's get back to fun. Here's Paul Petrino.
You're an easy mark on riled up.
Well, that's true. So this does not get me riled up. This gives me great joy when I hear the Bobby Petrino bit that we just played. Let's go back to what Paul Petrino's promo was when he was the head coach of the Idaho Vandals.
Hi, Vandal fans. It's your head coach, Paul Petrino. We've been grinding this whole offseason to bring excitement back to the Kibbe Dome. Every time we ring the bell, that means a player has done his personal best. It's your time. You can do your part. Go ring the bell. Buy season tickets. Come to our games and support the Vandal Scholarship Fund. Another player's rung the bell. That means he did his personal best. Do your part. Ring the bell. Go, Vandal.
Ring the bell. Ring the bell.
I'm glad Arkansas doesn't allow their coaches to do these things.
I remember when I was interning with Bo and Barnsaw, I think they played that over the course of one show probably 30 times. And
it sounded like the same guy as his brother.
Yeah.
They sound vocally the same.
Monotone. Yes. No distinction in their voice. Just, hey. Blah, 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 blah. Like, listen, y'all can make fun of me because my voice gets high every once in a while, but there's at least some inflection. There's at least some emotion behind some of the words I'm saying. And they don't even sound like Bobby and Paul don't even sound like, oh, and those are supposed to get you hyped for the season, right? And listen, I know yeah. that coaches, like, they're not, in a sense, they are marketers for their program, but that's not their main job. But I mean, surely they have someone in PR or something like, hey,
this doesn't work.
Little emotion. Come on. Like, yeah. Get excited. Like, you got to
take 82.
Yeah. So
let's do this again, coach.
So, we've played.
Here's another Red Bull.
We've played the two Petrino ones. I also want to go into Lane Kiffin's promo back when he was the head coach of the Florida Atlantic Owls. Same type of monotone. This guy doesn't look like he wants to be here. This was an hilarious promo, and I got to play it for you this morning.
Hey, Owl Nation. This is Coach Kiffin. What an exciting time. Next week is National Signing Day. As we sign some of the best players in America, we need some of the best fans in America. So please join us next week for this exciting season to come watch the Owls have a great year and a championship run starting with you. Go Owls.
Hey, Owl Nation. I got to take a break from sipping pina coladas out of Boca Raton and trying to hit on these girls that are half my age in college campus. You know what? I'm going to take this time to do a promo real quick for you guys, but I'm going to sound exactly like Coach Petrino and not put any happiness. Like
Coach Saban.
Yeah, or Coach Saban. Like, you can tell whether it's Kiff, whether it's Petrino, whether it's Paul Petrino, that these guys do not want to be there.
No.
There's nothing more. There's nothing worse than they would rather. There's like
roll tape. Let's get it over with.
One take. Yep. What, did any of those go longer than one take?
I don't think so.
No. Petrino,
sounded like the practice read.
Petrino was probably yelling and screaming at the cameraman or camera women that were taking the film because he was like, if you don't get this one take right, I am just going to get right up in you know where. So that's something. But these are great. Now we've talked about some promos to this point. Got one more soundbite before we change the subject. And this is just the all-time best commercial in the history of a college football coach. It's Coach O and the Hummer.
Hey, I'm Coach O. I just love my Hummer. I believe the Hummer is the best vehicle on the road. Big, tough, aggressive, and it represents everything that we want at Ole Miss. I have my Hummer. You need a Hummer. Tell them about it, JoJo.
Mississippi, they are here. The new Rogers Dabbs H3 Hummers are here.
The folks at Rogers Dabbs Hummer are first-team players. Come see them.
Rogers Dabbs and Hummer like nothing else. New H3 starting at just $32,000.
Love it.
There are two things that LSU Tiger fans...
So good they quit making them.
Yeah. There are two things that LSU Tiger fans listen to consistently. The song Neck, which we're not going to repeat the lyrics, and that Hummer commercial. That's what they play. And they eat their gumbo, and they drink their whiskey down there in Baton Rouge and New Orleans and all over parts of Louisiana. That's what they're getting high for, is listening to the college football season.
Your number one source of local news and information you need.
Bud Light Seltzer, 5% ABV and only 100 calories. We'd put it up against any other seltzer out there.